this is my weekly podcast, Adventures with Postpartum Depression, a show dedicated to sharing stories and spreading awareness about maternal mood disorders. For show notes and more information, please go to my website, ppdadventures.com. There's also a Facebook page, facebook.com/ppdadventures. And now, on to the show. Hello, adventurers. This is episode 70. I'm a few days later than usual posting this episode, or maybe just 2 days. It feels like more. Pippa had pneumonia last week. Whew, that was fun. It was actually not so bad. It was, for her, easier than having a bad cold. She had, I guess what they called it occult pneumonia, O-C-C-U-L-T, which means you can't detect it without a chest x-ray. But I think it's what people used to call walking pneumonia. So she had this fever that wouldn't go away. Eventually I took her to the doctor, and the doctor's like, if she wakes up with the fever tomorrow, I want you to get a chest x-ray because I'm not finding anything that would explain why she would have this fever. And so she woke up the next day with the last Wednesday, so a week ago, with the fever, so chest x-ray. And I tell you, I was so relieved when the doctor called with the results and said, Eureka, it's pneumonia. I was like, yes, because the next step was going to be blood tests and trying to figure out if she had some weird infection thing going on or, you know, something more serious. So I'm learning to just, not everything is automatically bad. Like, everything is inherently neutral. You would hear the phrase, my kid has pneumonia, and you would just automatically assume that's a bad thing. But for me, it was like, this is fantastic. We can handle this. We can get her better. She's had antibiotics. She's back. She was back at preschool yesterday just for like her usual, like they have a whole little stay and play, but she just did the 3 hours, the normal stuff. But today she's going to do the longer, and she, if she's feeling up to it, she will even go to her gymnastics class. So, you know, knock on wood, where's some wood? I don't know if this is actually real wood. Is it plastic wood? It's like this. Nathan brought this desk into our marriage, so it's Target. I think it's like wood that's been like, had a layer of plastic slathered on. Okay, anyway, so this episode's a little late because I was in pneumonia land, but I did give you that bonus episode last week anyway, so I think it all evens out. I hope you had, if you're in the United States or in some part of the world that celebrates Mother's Day, I hope you had a lovely Mother's Day. If you did not, remember, that's okay. Maybe listen to episode 69 for some thoughts on just, you know, I had a shitty first Mother's Day, but this Mother's Day was great, even though Pippa was getting over pneumonia, and we drove over to my parents' house, and as soon as we got there, she, like, had car sick puke everywhere. But, you know, it's all good. It worked out for me, so because I've got myself in a good place. If you're not in a great place, though, I really hope that you're doing the things that you need to do to get better. And that gives me a nice segue to Stephanie, because this week we have an interview with Stephanie, and Stephanie's been working hard to do the things that she needs to do to get better. She has, losing my voice. Stephanie is the mom to an 8-year-old girl and a now 9-month-old baby boy. She had difficulty getting pregnant in between the 8-year-old and the boy, and was hoping to have a third child. But unfortunately, after a difficult pregnancy, she had a very traumatic birth story, and they had to do an emergency hysterectomy at the end of the delivery to save her life, which led to a lot of PTSD and a very difficult postpartum period for Stephanie. And she is emerging from the darkness right now, but I felt so lucky to get to talk to her. I don't think you're going to hear me crying on the episode because I've gotten really good at crying quietly, because pretty much every interview makes me cry. But this time I cried multiple times during the episode, and it felt like a very inspiring experience to get to hear this story from Stephanie. And so without further ado, I'm going to turn it over to Stephanie. Hi, Stephanie. Thanks for being on the show today.
Hi, Courtney. Thank you for having me on the show.
So I know a bit about you, but where do you think it makes the most sense to tell your story? Oh, and we've got a 9-month-old there, which is always great. We love having babies on the show, too.
I had postpartum with my daughter, but it wasn't as severe as it was with my son. I started medication with her, got off about 3 months after, and I was okay. being that I had postpartum before with her, I kind of figured that I was going to be high risk to get it with my son. I was high risk with my daughter during that pregnancy, and she was also a preemie, so I was already high risk to begin with. So I pretty much kind of figured that most of that was going to go over into my pregnancy with my son.
Mm-hmm.
I am an EMT, so I do have medical background. And so, you know, what I should expect and what I what is actually going to go on. But with my son, the thing with him is that I wasn't able to get pregnant for about, the time I got pregnant with my son. My daughter is going to be 7, so pretty much took me that long to get pregnant again. I had a pituitary tumor, which I had removed in 2013, and that caused a lot of issues and health issues. I also had issues as far as with my uterus. I had maybe 3 or 4 surgeries there, so that was just a lot. You know, as far as like having kids and being told that I would never ever be able to have any, it put a lot on me and made me sad and depressed. And, you know, I always wanted more kids. I wanted 4. And unfortunately, now I'm only can have 2. When I found that I was pregnant with my son, we took a test and it's positive. I couldn't believe it because, you know, they told me I couldn't get pregnant. And then when we were for an ultrasound, I called one of the GYNs because I was bleeding. So something wasn't right. And when we went for an ultrasound, nothing was on the screen. We went for another ultrasound, still nothing was on the screen. And at that point, I started to get worried because I'm like, you know, if they're saying that I'm pregnant, something should be showing up on the screen. Is this a miscarriage? What exactly is going on? And the doctor at that point thought it was a blight ovum. And I kid you not, I remember the exact day. It was my friend's birthday in December, December 12th, actually. And I wanted to go eat something, and my boyfriend didn't want to eat with me, and I started crying. And I'm like, this is not right. I should not be crying because he doesn't want to eat with me. So I said, okay, we're going to Target. We're getting pregnancy tests. And I got 4, and I peed on all 4 of them. I had a digital one. I had the little line one. I had everyone possible. And they were all positive. And again, when we went for an ultrasound, because I told the doctor everything, and we went, nothing. He didn't show up on the screen. So my son was pretty much playing peekaboo from us. He didn't show, and I had maybe 20 ultrasounds, nothing. And up until one ultrasound, they showed that he looked like he was in my ovary.
Oh.
And I was actually going to go to work that day. I was in uniform. My boyfriend was with me, and I'm like, why are they keeping us so long? Something must be wrong. And then the tech didn't want to tell us. And she's like, you know, I had to send it to the hospital so someone over there can read it. And both of us at the time are EMTs. So I'm already panicking, and he's trying to calm me down. He's like, maybe it's nothing. I said, no, something is going on. And she was like, you need to go to the nurses and, you know, GYN. And they put us in a room, and they told us we need to send you to the emergency room because it looks like you have an ectopic pregnancy. And he looked like, you know, he's implanted in my ovary. I cried so loud and so bad. He didn't know how to console me because, you know, this is a pregnancy that obviously we both wanted. This is his first child. And I didn't want to get rid of it. And after I cried, and it was just a moment of them basically telling me that I can't keep this pregnancy or I have to get rid of it, that really hit me so hard. And once I got that portion out, like, okay, I'm going to stop crying. This is, no. I know females get ovarian cysts every month when it's time to menstruate, when it's time to ovulate. Are you sure that's not what it is? It's not an ovarian cyst and it's not the pregnancy. We don't know. Well, I need to make sure that you are 100% and know that it's an ectopic pregnancy and not that, because I refuse to take anything to get rid of this pregnancy if it's completely something else. And they, when I went to the hospital right after, the head radiologist didn't even want to call it. He was like, you know what, come back, let's do more blood work, let's see if your levels go down, then we know you're miscarrying. If the levels go up, then we know that the pregnancy is good, we just need to see where the egg is going to implant. Two more, three more exams, still nothing. He wasn't showing anywhere. And so finally, he was shown in the uterus where he was supposed to be. Which I was extremely happy. And then once we had to do another ultrasound to make sure, okay, his heartbeat. Then we couldn't find a heartbeat, which was another issue. And then finally, you know, we got a heartbeat. And then from there, it was pretty much the same. There was a lot of ultrasounds and everything. I also, at one point, got hurt at work. And I had a subchorionic hematoma, which is a bleed between the placenta and the uterus. So I was put on bed rest after Christmas. And I had a lot of complications as far as that throughout the pregnancy, which didn't make me feel like I was doing my job as a mom, as a pregnant woman carrying a child. Because I had surgery so many times there, I thought that maybe the surgeries had weakened my uterus, and that was partly the reason for the complications with him. And I know partly that's not true because, you know, my medical background, but then it's like my mindset at that moment was just like, there's something that I'm not doing, that my body's not doing. And it was rough during the pregnancy. And once we got over that love, we thought we was pretty much out the clear. But then during that, I mean, throughout the whole pregnancy after that, I was getting these dreams. I know pregnant people, we tend to get crazy dreams. Like sometimes, you know, if your husband is cheating on you or something crazy. But with me, I always had this dream. There's actually two dreams in particular where I would wake up and look between my legs and saw bright red blood. And another dream was that I had someone rip, like cut into my stomach and rip my child out of me. Those are the same two dreams that I had over and over throughout the whole entire pregnancy. And I was scared for that. I didn't know what to think of it. And, you know, I would call my boyfriend and he's just like, you know, it's just dreams. You're going to be fine. Nothing's going to happen. As, you know, ending towards my pregnancy, I had, like, this really bad feeling. The dream started to increase. I just had, like, this really, really bad feeling. Something bad was going to happen. And I kept telling him over and over, I'm going to die. And I just kept telling him that. I'm like, I'm going to die. And if something happens to me or to the baby, I want you to focus on him. For some, I just kept saying that over and over. He said, no, you're going to be fine. You're going to be fine. I said, no, based on our pregnancy, something is wrong. Something is completely wrong. And I need you to focus on the baby, not on me. If it comes to saving one of us, you need to save him. And on July 31st, I had really intense pain. this is not my first pregnancy, and it wasn't anywhere as far as labor pain, contractions. It wasn't anything as far as that. It was a pain that I have never felt before. I felt like something was completely off and wrong. I went into the hospital that night. I actually wanted to wait because I was watching Game of Thrones, and my boyfriend was like, no, we need to go. I'm like, wait until it's over, and then we can go. I refuse to miss the ending of this show. And he's like, come on, you cannot be doing this right now. I'm like, no, just give me my couple minutes, please.
This was the zombie dragon season, so I totally can relate.
Exactly. I was just like, you cannot make me get up. I don't care how much pain I'm in, I am going to sit. And he's just, I'm squeezing his hand, like, really, really tight. And he's watching my face, and then he's taking my blood pressure. He's like, come on, it was just a whole thing. And I'm, like, being so stubborn. And he's like, come on. And I'm just like, no. And so we ended up going. After the show was, like, as soon as it was finished, we got up and we left. And it's funny because I saw the doctor that Friday, and I wasn't dilated at all. And since it was a Sunday, we went in, and I told them everything that was going on. And I was 3 centimeters dilated. I'm like, what? I was so, like, lost. I'm like, how am I 3 centimeters dilated? If I had just seen the doctor on Friday, I can't be 3 centimeters. I'm like, this doesn't make any sense to me. With my daughter, I was only 2 centimeters. Dilated, but my water broke. So with my son, I hit 3 centimeters. I'm like, okay, so what? They're going to keep me now? No, my contractions were anywhere. I wasn't having any contractions. I was just 3 centimeters. But I just had really bad pain, and it was in my lower back and my abdomen. It was just horrible, horrible pain. And they was like, well, we're going to send you home. Go eat something spicy, go for a walk, go have sex, and come back, hopefully by tomorrow morning, or later on tonight, you'll be ready to have the baby.
Did I hear that right? Did they tell you to go home and have sex?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Glad that that's the medical advice.
This, I mean, what tends to happen is that semen also helps with dilation and causes contractions.
Like, I know the medical stuff, but, like, you're in intense pain. Like, that's, like, the last thing on your mind.
Yeah, honestly, then again, I really haven't had sex throughout my whole entire pregnancy, so the fact that my doctor told us we shouldn't have sex because of all the complications that we had, so for the doctor there to say, yeah, you can go do that, I was so excited. Like, for a quick moment, I was like, you see, you could. My boyfriend was like, no. He's like, sorry, no, not until... Your GYN says that we could? No. I was like, all right, fine. But we went home, and I tossed and turned the whole entire night. I had nightmares. I probably jumped in my sleep. I mean, he woke up. He was frantic. Like, he was trying to console me, and I'm like, I can't. I have to go back. So soon in the morning, we went back. I was 3.5 centimeters, and I'm like, you got to be kidding me. Contractions still nowhere in sight. They're like, you know what? Just come back. I'm sorry. Like, they literally sent me back home again. So that was August 1st. I went back. I did everything. I did exercise. I did jumping jacks. I walked up and down the hill. I did squats. I did everything possible that I can think of. And as I'm doing all this, my pain is just getting worse. And I'm like, okay. I ended up going back later on that night for Monday, and they ended up keeping me overnight. And they're like, we're going to keep you overnight. We'll give you some morphine. And that was honestly the best sleep that I have probably had throughout my whole entire pregnancy. But then again, they monitored me the whole entire time, and my contractions still. They were too far apart. No reason really to keep me. They made me walk back and forth in the hallway. Maybe if you go walk here, walk to the nursery, go look at the baby, come back. Maybe you'd be dilated by the time we come and check you again. They checked me again and nothing. Nothing. I was still 3.5. And the doctor that I had at that moment, she tried to like touch me. I was screaming and crying. I don't know what she was doing, but it was the most pain I probably ever felt out there. I was just like, yes, yeah, something is completely wrong. And I was just asking questions as far as what happens if I don't dilate any more than when I'm dilating? Like, at that point, I was 36 weeks. I'm like, are you guys, like, going to induce me? And they're like, no, we can't induce you. The most we can probably induce you is when you're 38 weeks, and that's because you already had a child. And I'm like, I cannot, that's crazy. I'm like, I cannot stay 40 weeks pregnant with this intense pain and I'm not dilating. There's no way in hell anyone can deal with this type of pain.
Right.
It's like something is completely wrong. But clinically wise, I wasn't showing any signs according to them. My son's heart rate was fine. They did ultrasounds on him, sonograms. He was fine. I mean, the only thing they kept telling me was that there was a lot of fluid. That's all they told me. But other than that, he was fine. And I'm like, okay. They sent me back home. The next day, I saw my GYN, and he stripped the lining of my uterus. So he got me to 4 centimeters. 2 hours after I seen him, I called him crying hysterical. I'm like, I have pain. Something has to happen. Something is wrong. And he's like, go to the hospital. I stripped the lining. You could be in labor. And I remember, I'm like, nope, I am not going. They're going to send me home. I don't want to go. And he's fighting me. He's like, Stephanie, you need to go. I'm like, Caramitos, I do not want to go. I put up a fight. Like, I really did. And he's like, you need to go. I am calling the hospital to let them know that you're coming, that I just seen you, that I took the lining. You need to go to see what's going on. So I finally went, even though I really didn't want to, but I ended up going. And literally, I was in the hospital for 20 minutes before they sent me home. And it was the same doctor that I had the whole entire week who kept sending me home.
What, was this a male doctor or a female?
It was a female.
Female. Wow, you would expect a little more sympathy there.
No. And the funny part is that she had my name, too. So there's no way that I will never, ever forget her. So, and she literally told one of the residents, oh, if she's not dilated more than what she was at the doctor's office, send her home. Those are her exact words. And I started crying. I cried so hard because I wasn't being listened to and I wasn't taken seriously. And it frustrated me. And I'm like, how is it that, first off, I'm high risk. I have a bleeding disorder. This is not my first pregnancy. My daughter was premature.
It's okay. This is real life.
My daughter was premature. You know, something is clearly wrong.
Right.
And she just completely disregarded everything that I was feeling or saying. And I was sent home. So the next day, which was August 3rd, I also worked as a health director in the summertime. So I was also doing that. So I went to work, and all I do is really I sit down until kids get hurt. And then, you know, I put a Band-Aid, things like that. So I did that. And I have a cot there, so whenever kids get sick or they just need a nap, they just rest. I was the one who was on the cot. I was in so much pain, I couldn't even move. At that point, my boss was like, do you want to go home? And I'm like, no, I'm fine. I'm fine. And I went home after that, and I went to sleep. I mean, I didn't even say hi to my daughter, how I usually do. I just, like, said hi from a distance, went right to the room, and knocked out. I was just in so much pain. And when I woke up, that pain intensified. My stomach was so hard. I got up. I was holding my stomach. I was crying. Like, I don't even know. I got up at one point and started pacing back and forth in my room. And I was pacing back and forth. And I was refusing to go to the hospital. I'm like, I'm not going in. I'm like, I'm not going to go in. They're going to send me home. I'm not going to go. I can wait it out. They'll go away. I'll stop eventually. That was my mentality. And my stepdad came to check on me. And he was just like, are you okay? You know, he's like, are you okay? You know, do you want to go to the hospital? And I'm like, I don't know. He's like, you know, if you're going to go, they're going to send you home again. They've been sending you home all week. And I'm like, I know, but I have really bad pain. Like, I don't know what to do. Like, I was just stuck. I was like, I don't want to go and then be sent home. And then, you know, I was just like, I can't. And then all of a sudden, my daughter came out of nowhere. She was in the living room. She didn't really see me, so she didn't know that I was crying or that I was going through this. And she just came into the room and she's like, Mommy, you need to go to the hospital. And she said it again. She's like, Mommy, you know, you should go to the hospital. At that moment when she said it, it hit me. Mm-hmm. Like, I was being so stubborn and not going. But my daughter, who only six, well, at the time, five, she was turning six in a couple of weeks. For her to tell me, Mommy, you need to do this, it was just like, you know what? Yeah, I need to go. Like, I didn't know at that moment, like, why I was being, well, I knew why I was being so stubborn and so far as not going. But for some reason, when she said it, it made sense. And I told my stepdad, okay, take me to the hospital. And when we got into the FDR drive, there's a 61st Street exit. Literally, I was on the phone with my boyfriend, and I was like, look, I'm heading to the hospital. Something, I have really bad pain. I have to go in. He's like, but they're going to send you home. I'm like, I don't care. Like, I will fight whoever I need to fight. And I'm just keep me, watch me, whatever. They're not sending me home tonight. That I'll make sure of. And literally when I was on the phone with him, I had a gut through my leg. And I'm like, oh, great, my water broke. So, yeah, the baby's up to me tonight. And when I looked down, it wasn't my water. It was bright red blood. And I'm like, right away, my medical experience kicked in. The cramping and pain intensified. My stomach was hard as a rock. And, I mean, I had jeans, like short jeans. And it saturated the jeans. It went through onto the cart, like the seat, everything. And my stepdad started freaking out. What the heck? He didn't know where to put himself because with my daughter, when my water was breaking, it was also in his car. So he's like, great, I get blessed twice. And once we literally made it to the hospital, they rushed me upstairs. The doctor who sent me home all those days, they didn't even look at me. Like, she looked at me and walked away. Like, she didn't even acknowledge me at all. And there was a nurse there. Her name is Jennifer, which still to this day I'm very close with. She knows me, and she knows my background, my history, my medical history, and she saw that I was ruptured. So there's a doctor there who knew me when I was 6 months pregnant. and he knew of my chart at the back of my hand. So she right away she went, she got him. Like when she screamed his name, that looked something bleeding. And me, the fact that I have a bleeding disorder, this is dangerous now. So he jumped out of his seat real quick. He put me in a room sat. I'm like, I need my DVABP. Automatically, I was thinking that's what I need to stop the bleeding. I need something so I can cut. Like, I'm going to bleed out. And I didn't even get myself dressed. They cut everything off of me. They laid me down. They were trying to get lines in me. Meanwhile, I was by myself the whole entire time. And they put the baby on a monitor. And my son's heart rate is usually at 156. And his heart rate was at 80. And he looked at me. He's like, looked up to me. I'm going to check you to see if you dilated more. He's like, you're still at 4 centimeters. He was like, we need to do an emergency C-section. I started crying. I cried so hard. Because it was just like, my dreams are coming true. It was just the worst. And then I was by myself. And then my cell phone was ringing, and it was his dad. And I was by myself, and I couldn't tell him. And he was getting, and I knew he got worried because I was picking up my phone. He kept calling and calling up until they took me to the next room. And the nurse, she held my hand, and she was like, you know, you can hold my hand, I'm here, don't worry. And literally, they put the mask on me, and it was so, like, the air was just so thick. At one point, I was like, I can't breathe. I'm like, I had surgeries before, and I have never had an issue with the anesthesia where I didn't feel like I couldn't breathe. It was just too thick for me. And next thing I know, I was out. My son was born in 7 minutes. He was healthy. He was heavy. He was a big boy, 8 pounds, 4 ounces. Yeah. But what ended up happening was that I took a turn for the worse. I hemorrhaged. I lost a lot of blood. I needed 25 units of blood. They did a surgery to try to stop the bleeding, so they put a balloon. And they put me in the recovery room for that, and I woke up screaming because I felt... Okay. I felt the doctor, like, doing compressions on the uterus. To stop the bleeding because I was still bleeding even after they put in the balloon. And I remember the doctor telling me, Stephanie, you need to stay up. You need to stay awake. Don't fall asleep. And I was in and out of it. I would black out and come back up. But it was bad. At one point through it all, I called for my mom. My mom got there. My sister got there. My boyfriend was there. He was on my left side the whole entire time. I called for my mom, and this is right after I knocked out, and I woke up and I screamed for her, and I told her, I need you to take care of Jelani. And I told my boyfriend that I need you to take care of Kai. At that moment, I knew what was going to happen. I felt my body giving up. I didn't even get to see my son. All I saw was his foot, and my sister was holding him and she was crying. But I wasn't even aware of what was truly going on with him. And I remember my boyfriend telling me, we need you. You know, Kai needs you, your daughter needs you, and I need you. You're not going anywhere, you're going to be fine. And I said, no, I need you to take care of him. And then the doctor made a decision that they were going to do a hysterectomy. And I said no. And he looked at me, and because we wanted another kid after, we wanted to try again after son. And I looked at him and I said no, and I started crying, and then I knocked out. And then I woke up in ICU 2 days later. I didn't get to meet my son. 2 days later, I woke up, I tried to take a tube out of my mouth. It was really, really bad. After that, you know, I was finally able to hold my son once I was able to move from the ICU onto labor and delivery. And, the doctor who kept sending me home came to visit me, and she wanted to apologize. And I honestly told her, I said, I don't want to hear anything that has to come out of your mouth, because if you would have did your job, this would have never happened. And I was in the hospital for a week. I came out the day before my daughter's birthday. And I remember crying once I came out the hospital. I sat down and I was crying because, one, I lost my uterus, and that's when everything just hit me. I was staying with my in-laws, and once I got there, I wasn't with my daughter. My daughter was with my mom. They were going to stay with her, and so I was able to get around more. So it was just me and my son and my boyfriend at his family's house. And I right away went into a really bad depression.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't want to eat. I wasn't eating at all. I wasn't even drinking water. And I was breastfeeding, which was probably the worst thing that I probably did, was not eat or drink anything while breastfeeding.
Did anyone at the hospital warn you that, like you already knew because you had it a little with your daughter, but did they put you on high alert?
They sent over one of the RSN nurses, the visiting nurses,
uh-huh,
to the house. But it was more to check my incision site and everything. But the doctor who was there, her name was Dr. Pallero, and she and my GYN are actually really close because he hired her, so she got him to come into the hospital. But based on them two talking, they did express, because of everything that happened, and yes, I had my previous pregnancy, that I should be more on top of it now, or everyone should be more on the lookout, because this is a traumatic major. But it was, as far as, they said it, but I feel like not everyone was really paying mind to it. Like, they really didn't think, because I had it before, it wasn't as bad.
Mm-hmm.
And then also, I wasn't talking to my family as much. I, even his family, I stood in his mother's room, which is downstairs, so I didn't have to go up the stairs. And all day I was in the room with the baby. All day. And, you know, the baby didn't leave the room, and so he came home from work, and he gave the baby to his family. Other than that, the baby was with me. And once he had the baby, I was in the room. I didn't get up. I didn't want to get up. I didn't want to do anything. It was too painful to even get up. You know, I was not just recovering from a C-section, but also a hysterectomy.
Right.
And I literally felt as if my guts were going to fall out. Like, that first step that I took after getting that surgery, after, like, being, Stephanie, you need to get up to walk around.
This just sounds like I've heard so many traumatic stories, but this just sounds so devastating.
It completely is. And I knew that I was gonna, that I knew exactly that my postpartum was gonna be horrible compared to how it was before, because now I'm having nightmares. There's certain things that I remember from the surgery itself, waking up at night, you know. Like, I don't remember the full details, but as days went on, I was getting bits and pieces of it. And I think that was part of the worst part. And, And then, you know, we was waiting for the.
It's okay. This reassures the other moms out there that all babies cry. It's an upsetting story. He's making the noises I want to make.
So,
So you were having nightmares?
Yeah, I was having really bad nightmares. I was remembering certain things from the surgery. The C-section, certain things from the whole thing, as far as, you know, the doctor having hands inside my uterus, pressing down, you know, it was really bad. I mean, still to this day, like, I'm still getting the pieces of it. But, you know, once we moved into our apartment, because that was another thing, our apartment was still, like, getting fixed up. So once we was able to move into the apartment, I was able to settle down just a bit because I was at our place. I really didn't have someone hovering over me every 5 minutes. But then I had phone calls. My mom was calling, my sister was calling, my grandmother stood with me for the first 2 or 3 weeks that I got into the apartment. And that was nice. But then once she left, it was like, I guess it was hard for me. I was able to hide what I was going through in front of my grandmother. So it was a couple of weeks that she was there, and I guess, like, once she left, there was no need to hide. I didn't want to get up from bed. I mean, I would take my daughter to school and then come back home and get in bed and stay in bed. You know, I would force myself to get up from the bed to cook and to clean and do everything else that I needed to do. But most of the time I was stuck in bed, and he would tell me, I mean, he would call me if he had a break or text me, what are you doing? You need to get up. this is depression. If you stay in bed, it's just going to get worse. And I'm like, I don't think you understand. This is not just depression. This, like, he had depression before, like, once his grandmother passed away. And I'm like, this is something completely different. You cannot tell me to get out of bed when physically I cannot get out of bed. When it's extremely painful to get around and you expect me to get out of bed. I can't. And she's like, no, you can do it. I'm like, you don't understand the pain. And I wasn't taking anything to the pain. I don't want to take anything to the pain. And I told them that. Eventually I kept telling something is wrong. Like, I'm not right. Something is completely wrong. I'm not right. And my DRM has been with me throughout this whole entire stuff. And I remember seeing him. I made an appointment. Like, he came and he visited me at the hospital. They got him come in that night to the last surgery. He was there when I woke up. He, you know, he said, he spoke with me. And when I had my first appointment with him, I've been with him for about 7 years now. So he knows me like the back of my hand. And he could read my facial expressions and everything. And he said, look, I know you're not okay. I know what you're going through because he has something similar to this with his wife when they had their twins. He had PTSD. And he's like, I cannot help you, Stephanie, unless you tell me exactly what you're feeling. I cannot tell your emotions. I cannot give you something without you telling me exactly what's going on. And at that moment, I just started crying. I bawled it all out. I said, it doesn't stop. It doesn't go away. It comes and it's constant and it doesn't stop. I'm like, I can't deal with it. So right away, he put me on Zoloft. He started me at a low dosage. And he also gave me a referral to see a therapist. And he said, look, the Zoloft is going to take a little bit of time to kick in. But in the meantime, take it every day the way how you're supposed to. And let's get you an appointment for a therapist. And let's go from there. I'll see you in 2 weeks.
So did you take the Zoloft?
I took the Zoloft, but I didn't feel anything from the Zoloft. I was taking it and nothing. I mean, and I remember calling my boyfriend, like, look. Like, he knew that I was on medication. He really didn't want me to be on medication. He thought that maybe I could just beat this, you know. And I'm like, you know, it's not working. And then him and I were having issues on top of that. You know, he didn't want to have sex with me. You know, at one point, I wanted to, like, we tried before, and the first time I cried because everything just felt so different. I didn't feel anything, and I don't know if it was because it was just too early or if I was just so caught up in my head on, you know, I should be feeling this and not that way, or I should be feeling something and I'm not feeling anything, or so focused on the fact that I no longer have a uterus. And after that, it was just like, he didn't want to be intimate anymore, like sexually, but I mean, he wanted, oh no, let's lay down and watch TV and I'll hold you. And I'm like, but I don't want that. Like, I want to try to have sex. And he's like, no, he didn't want to. He didn't want to engage in it. And at that point, I thought he was cheating. I was like, you have to be cheating on me. Like, any, I went to his phone. I blocked females. I blocked his cousin at one point. It was just, my mind at that moment, I went, that shit crazy. It was, I fought with him about everything. If it wasn't the fact that he didn't want to fuck me, or the fact that I don't like doing dishes. You need to do dishes. If I cook, do dishes. And he would leave dishes there. Like, if I have the sink clean and he'll go and put dishes, and then I have dishes, I don't want to clean them. I expect him to do it, and he wouldn't clean it. So I'll get mad about that. Because I had the baby on my hip, and then I also had my daughter. So it was just like, you know, you can at least do something. And then it was just like, whenever he'll stay with the baby, like, even just for me to take a shower, or for him to just have the baby for a couple minutes, the baby will cry and scream at the top of his lungs. And me hearing my son scream or cry, my ears would ring. And it's insane. Like, I just, at that moment, like, I was just so angry at my son for screaming and crying, and that I would just automatically go run and take him out of out of his father's arms and just pick him up. Like, no. And he was just like, I had him. Like, clearly you didn't. If he's screaming and howling the way he is, you don't have him. I used to get so mad. He's like, but why are you so mad? I'm like, forget it. Just give me him. And there was one point where, and this is actually the day that I got admitted into the psych ward. Me and my boyfriend at the time, we were fighting. We were arguing really, really bad. And it was because he wanted to take the baby to his mom's house. And I was waiting for my daughter to come back with her dad. And I was like, no, your mother doesn't work tomorrow. Take it tomorrow, it's fine. I already spoke to your mother. And he got mad. And he just said, no, I'm going to take the baby now. You can stay here. And the fact that he said that he was going to take the baby, I lost it. My son has never been away from me since he was in the hospital. Other than that, I have been with my son every single day, every moment that I had. Even if someone is with me, he's still with me. He's still on top of me. So the moment he went and he got his baby back and he had the baby in his hand, I was like, no, you're not taking him from me. Automatically, in my mindset, he was taking the baby away from me. He's not going to bring back my son. At that moment, he became my enemy. He wasn't my partner. He wasn't someone that I was with. He was someone who was taking my son away from me. And I lost it. He refused to give me back the baby. And I picked up a knife. Because I was so scared of losing my son and not having my son. I'm like, you need to give him back to me. And at that moment, I was like, I wanted my son. And he didn't believe that it was this bad. And once he gave me back the baby, I was fine. I was fine. I went back to the room. I did anything that I needed to do. I was fine. I had my son. But then when it came to me and him after that, it was hard for him. He was just like, it was an issue. You know, he lost. I called my GYN. And I told him, you know, I called him crying. And I was just like, the Zoloft is not working. It's not working at all. And I was in tears, and I'm like, chemicals, this is not working. I can't. And he's like, and he's trying to calm me down. And my daughter was in her room, and she was a little scared because I was just going through it, and I was pacing back and forth and crying. And he was like, okay, where are you? And I'm like, I'm home. I'm not in Manhattan. I was living in the Bronx. And he was like, okay, Stephanie. And at that point, I had cut my wrist. And he was like, okay, I didn't realize it was this severe. I need you to go to Lenox Hill so you can get evaluated. And I'm like, I don't want to go because they're going to keep me, and I'm not going to be with my son. my daughter. I was concerned about my son. And I was like, no, I'm not going. I'm not going to go. And he said, Stephanie, if you don't go, I will go personally to go get you, or I will call 911 and you have no choice. I'd rather you go in voluntarily. He said, you know what? I'm going to call your mother. And I was like, no, don't call her. He was like, what is your mother's number? I said, no, you're not going to call her. Like, I gave him the runaround. He said, don't give me the runaround because I know she's the emergency contact. She's one of your emergency contacts. He ended up calling your mom. My sister and my mom, they came and they, both my sisters, so my mom came. And my mom took the kids. My mom was going to go with me. And I didn't want my mom to go with me. So I asked my sister. She came with me to the hospital. And so they were ignoring some of me. And like they had someone evaluate me. And I was like, look, I'm going home to my mom's house. I'm going to be around people. I'm going to be okay to go home with them. And then I'll just do an outpatient, fine, I'll be okay. And then I guess the head, the attending there was just like, no, you know, your GYN is really concerned. We think you should at least stay, you know, at least for, you know, 72 hours, just, you know, just to see what's going on, blah, blah, blah. And I fought it. And then my mom was like, let's do it. You pay the fine. And then I was there for about a week.
That's a long time to be away from your baby.
Very long time.
Did anyone ever bring him to visit, or did you decide to not have him come?
They worked something out with me, so he was able to come 2 days. I was able to see him for about 3 days, I think, 3 or 4.
I spent but 4 nights, and just hearing 1 week just sounds like such a lifetime.
Yeah.
Did the hospital stay help at all?
What they ended up doing was, at first, they wanted to do some electrical thing for the person.
Uh-huh.
So they would knock me out and basically like zap my brain, if you want to put it in those terms.
Mm-hmm.
They said, you know, that tends to help with the person, but me being that I had a pituitary tumor and it came back recently, that would be another concern that I had, like, okay, you're going to do that. What effects would that have on that? So I was like, no, I'm not doing it. And then that will also prolong me staying in the psychoid. And I'm just like, no. So what they ended up doing was upping the Zoloft. I went from 25 to 50, and they added Clonopin. And once I got the Clonopin, I was a little better. GYN was, that's another reason why he wanted me to go to Lenox Hill, because he was able to come see me and speak with the doctors there so he can be involved in the treatment. And the nurse Jennifer from labor and delivery also came to see me. So that was another good thing. So once I left, when I came home, I still wasn't feeling, then I started to become more dependent on the Clonopin. I didn't feel like the dose they were giving was enough. Like, I was still feeling anxiety. I was still getting the nightmares and the PTSD. It was just like a really bad, horrible cycle, and it was just going over and over. And it was to the point where I would have my son in his crib, and I would just look at him and just cry. And I would go silent. I didn't want to talk to anyone. I was silent. this is really bad. And then I told him, I was like, this is not working. The Zoloft isn't working. Then I went off the Zoloft, and then I only just took the Clonopin. And then they ended up upping the Clonopin for me to take. And I'm like, okay, I can deal with the Clonopin, it's fine, but I need something else. And I was finally able to get a psychiatrist, and they told me to stop taking the Clonopin, and if the Zoloft isn't working, then we're not gonna try to put you on Zoloft. They ended up putting me on Lexapro. I've been on the Lexapro, and I feel much better than I did before. But it's still a process. I'm still not over what I'm over, you know, what I need to get over. And it gets hard each month, especially when he turns, you know, 9 months, 10 months, he's in 1 month. Especially on the third, it hits me, and I kind of get a little down. But with the Lexapro, I still have like some of the symptoms, but it's not as severe. Like I can feel it, but it's very, very mild than what it was before. And I can feel like my body waiting to get to that height, but it doesn't. It stays where it's supposed to stay because of the medication.
And so I couldn't tell from something you said earlier. Are you still with your boyfriend?
We are working through it now. Through that time where I was in the psych ward, he gave up the apartment. I went back to my mom. We weren't together, but he said that we were. I mean, at that moment, he was just complicated because I'm like, you know, his thing was, you cannot be in a relationship right now. You need to focus on being better. And once you're better, then we can decide whether we can be in a relationship or not. And I'm like, and that didn't make any sense to me. I'm like, how is it that? It didn't make any sense to me at all. Like, it's either you want to be with a person or you don't. It's yes or no. There is no in between. But he says that he has never left my side, that he has always been here. But, you know, me going through what I went through, I felt like he did leave.
I think there's a lot of moms who can relate to what you're saying, and that it's helpful that you're saying this for them, because most moms don't want to raise issues they felt with their boyfriend, fiance, husband, whoever, because like they just want to keep it a secret, or they're worried that it'll cause more harm to a relationship that's already damaged. But this is like such an excruciating experience you went through.
And that's another thing. Like he saw everything. I mean, I know he's going through post PTSD from that. I know. Like when we went to go visit his brother who just had a baby, and we went together, we both were crying the moment we stepped into the labor and delivery floor. It was just like, so we're both dealing with it. It's just,
yeah.
We're dealing with it in two different ways. And that's one thing, like now I'm able to sit back and say, okay, yes, I don't feel that you were there for me. And I feel like you did leave me and I don't understand. And then I can also sit back and say, you know what? I understand why you needed to step back, because one, now he's a police officer, so he doesn't need that attention, because if anything, he can lose his job. So it's like, I understand to a certain degree, but then part of me is just like, you know what? You weren't there. Mm-hmm. Like, I guess I still want to pick a fight, if you want to use those terms. And I mean, like, now, like, we're talking about certain things, and I'm just like, in the back of my mind, like, I should really be saying this, but I really don't. And then there's times like where things get really heated now, and it's just like, okay, I don't, you weren't there. You know, you really do not understand. Because like this, now that he'll bring up certain things, like when I was living with his family, that I isolated myself from his family, that I didn't want the baby around his family, that I kept the baby from his family. I'm like, do you not realize I was not myself?
Right.
You know, I was depressed. I was in pain. I wasn't eating. Like, what part don't you understand? So that's not me.
I think it's hard to articulate this. Like, okay, so I was hospitalized like you. I didn't have the traumatizing birth experience like you did. You know, like, everyone's got their own stories. But I can't fully relate to depression anymore because I've been out of those woods for so long. Mm-hmm. And it's like your brain is changed by everything going on. Like, it's literally changed. And once it changes back, it's hard to remember what it was. And so I can't even imagine what it's like if you've never, like, it's like I can relate and empathize, but it's also like I also know that what you're going through, I can't even really replicate the experience. Like, you can't feel a contraction pain unless you're having a contraction pain. I don't think you can, like, truly get your mind around depression except when you're in depression. I'm not trying to excuse him or anything. I'm just trying to get, maybe, like, when you get through this further, you'll, like, be able to process more feelings. It's, like, it's such an incredible journey. And it's completely, you're so brave. And you're working so hard, I can tell, just to get through this.
Thank you. And that's one thing that I told him. I'm like, this is not a permanent thing. This is something that will go over, but it's going to take time. I'm not going to be 100% just because they put me on medication or, you know, medication right now is just a band-aid right now. And so I do my part as well, you know?
Yeah, no, you're working on it. I can tell. And I mean, and you have a baby, like, you know, your daughter, is she 7 now?
Yes, my daughter, she'll be 7 in August when he turns 1.
Who's easier?
She's a 12.
Who's easier, the almost 7-year-old or the almost 1-year-old? Well, I know the baby can't move away and run away from you and talk back, but, you know, your almost 7-year-old can feed herself and put on her own clothes and play a game by herself.
Yeah, I guess, yeah.
And you're dealing with, you're dealing with all of this trauma and just these horrors that you went through while having a baby to take care of, who just sounds so cute and glorious, but I'm sure he's also sometimes a little difficult.
He's actually been a really good baby. He's just very active.
Oh, thank God. You deserve some easy break on the way.
He's been a really good baby. I got really lucky with him.
My second was my boy, and he was easy too. And it was kind of like, okay, you gave me the hard postpartum experience the first time. You're at least giving me the easy baby the second time.
Yeah, I mean, that's one thing. I'm like, okay, I have postpartum before. My daughter was very colicky, so that was a bit of a mess. And the postpartum wasn't that bad. I got the really bad postpartum and everything else, but a real easy baby. So I'm like, I got something.
Well, Stephanie, before we end our call, is there anything else you'd like to tell people listening?
What I just want to say is listen to your body.
Yeah.
Be very, very in tune with yourself. The moment you feel that something is off or wrong, seek help right away. I mean, I think I probably should have not left the hospital without something. I think that's one thing that I should have done was the fact that I've been at the hospital for a week, I was feeling it at the hospital. I should have at least got something before I left. And I probably would have been a lot better off than I was when I went into the psych ward. I probably would have avoided that if I would have got help a lot sooner.
Mm-hmm. Those are very wise words. I think as women, we're often kind of separated from our bodies and told to like not trust them, and you know, just take this Motrin, take this Advil, suck it up, and it, you know, it's your body. Listen to it.
Yeah, and that's another thing. Like, even like to say everything, don't hold anything back at all. Like when I spoke to the psychiatrist, I told him. And I, that was, like, the first time I actually said, like, you know what? I had a point where I had thoughts that I thought weren't normal, that I knew weren't normal. He's like, all mothers, all new mothers, especially if they go through postpartum, have these thoughts. These are completely normal thoughts. And I'm just like, no, that doesn't seem right. Doesn't seem right to me. But you're not going to know unless you tell someone.
Mm-hmm.
You can't be afraid to tell them anything. If you feel, even if it's a thought of harming yourself or harming your child, those are normal thoughts, according to my therapist, my psychiatrist, for women who are going through postpartum.
Yeah.
Normal thoughts. And you should let them know, because then that gives them a better idea or a better treatment plan for you. Because each treatment is different. What might work for me might not work for the next person. Each medication is completely different. And based on what you say, it's how they can help treat you. Like, the Zoloft clearly wasn't working for me because it wasn't also, you know, attacking my nightmare. The Lexapro helped with my nightmares, and I'm able to sleep a little bit better than I was before. So, just say everything. There is no shame in anything that you have to say. You are not the first person, and you're definitely not the last person to go through something like this or to have any of your thoughts.
I could not say it better than that. Well, thank you, Stephanie, so much for coming on the show today.
Thank you for having me.
So that's it for this week. Thank you, Stephanie, so much for coming on the show and being so honest, and especially want to thank you for talking about the way your postpartum period brought out some relation issues with your boyfriend, because I think that's a very common experience for moms to have difficult feelings towards their significant other, and maybe their significant other is not, but you know, I'm at a loss for words because we don't even talk about this so much. It's an issue that needs to be talked about, how postpartum depression, how the postpartum mood disorders, how a traumatic birth experience can affect a relationship. And I've had people ask me to like bring it up more on the show, and it's a difficult thing to talk about. And it's something that I hope we get there. And we're, the more moms who start to talk about it, the easier it'll be for us to develop a dialogue around this important issue. So that's it for this week. Show notes will be available at ppdadventures.com. And I promise I'm going to work on them today and get them out too. And if you would like to share your story on an upcoming episode, I am scheduling interviews to do over the summer. And you can email me, Courtney@ppdadventures.com. I'd love to hear your story and bring it out onto the podcast to share. I think it's a very cathartic experience for the moms who do this. So I'm just going to stop rambling on. Sometimes I'm less coherent and sometimes I'm more coherent. I think I'm on the less coherent side of the spectrum today. So we're just going to say, I hope you have a wonderful week. Postpartum depression is an incredibly lonely and isolating illness, like all maternal mood disorders and anything related. Anything is just, it's just difficult, and it can make you feel like you're the worst mother in the history of mothers, and you're isolated and no one can possibly understand what you've been through and are going through. But if you've listened to enough episodes on the show, you will know that you are not alone, and there are so many thousands and thousands of moms who are currently going through this right now with you, who can understand, and tens of hundreds of thousands more who have already been through this. And we're rooting for you, and with proper support, you can and will make a full recovery. I love you, and I hope you have a good week.